Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Sanjay Touré, another episode of Office Evolution Radio. Sanjay.
I'm doing well. I just got two packs of snacks and I got a coffee.
You got snacks?
I'm really good. And
that'll get your blood sugar back.
Exactly.
Stabilized.
I got energy now.
So this is going to be a good show.
Yeah.
We got two people here that I have never met before and two businesses I'm not familiar with.
I'm ready.
You're ready? All right. Let's kick it off with Alex Roach, and he is with Iberia Bank. Welcome, Alex.
Very glad to be here. Thanks for having me today.
And then a little later, we're going to get to Nicole Mitchell, and she's with HR Biz. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So let's kick it off with Alex. Tell us about Iberia Bank. How are you serving folks?
Yes, absolutely. Iberia Bank actually is a bank located out of Lafayette, Louisiana. Started in 1887, so has really, you know, been through a lot in the banking industry over the past 130.
Was it always called Iberia Bank?
So the institution started in a place called New Iberia, Louisiana. They unfortunately didn't have the size and capacity to handle the type of bank that it is now.
Right.
So because of the regional size and growth, it is now out of Lafayette, Louisiana, a little bit bigger city than New Iberia.
Right.
But we used to be a bank here in Georgia by the name of Georgia Commerce Bank. Mm-hmm. And Georgia Commerce Bank was a local community bank, had about 8 locations. And Iberia was looking for a presence in Georgia, and they found us. What I like about the merger when they purchased us back in 2015 was that they wanted a Georgia presence, but ultimately they liked the fact that we were a locally ran bank. We made a lot of local decisions. We weren't the big box bank, because that's my background. I come from the world of Bank of America. I come from the world of SunTrust. And with my 27 years experience, I chose to work for Georgia Commerce Bank. So when Iberia took over, I was real excited. I did some research, found out what a great organization it was. And I have been a commercial business lender and retail branch manager for the last really 27 years. So.
Now, for the listener that isn't familiar, can you explain like what would be different for them as a customer with a big box bank versus a community or a smaller bank like?
Sure. Absolutely. So one of the biggest things that I always talk about with the difference between us and maybe like a Bank of America. If you haven't heard, obviously there's a huge shakeup in the banking world as BB&T and SunTrust came together. So here in Atlanta, it definitely impacts us because Atlanta is a SunTrust home. And now they're going to probably have to figure out what to do with SunTrust Park over the next couple years. But what I say about larger institutions, and one of my phrases is it's not the name on the building, it's the most important, it's the people inside of it. Because Bank of America, it's almost like when I worked there, it was like cattle call. I felt like I had 10 customers that would come in, 10 products that I would go out, and I'd be like, who did I just help? What took place? With Iberia Bank and smaller banks like us and regional banks, I always say that I get to know every one of my clients. My clients is my family. I invest in your story. I invest in your business. So when I take on, let's say, a loan with a larger institution, your numbers and your data are all that's impactful to me. But when I take on a loan here, your story is what's impactful to me. So I look at the whole ability of your business, why you're successful. Is this your dream? How can I help? And I actually become an advocate. I was more just kind of an order taker with a larger institution where I feel like I incorporate your story and I get to know who you are. So I take on a real ownership of my clients and my businesses.
So now a customer that comes to you, are they typically, is your bank focused more on just individuals or is it more of a business bank?
So we're probably more focused and more driven on a business bank. We do consumers, but in the end, we're really kind of a commercial and business banking operation. But we are full retail, so it's a full retail location to go along with commercial lending. My specialty is in commercial lending, but anything from the small debit card to the basic checking account, all the way up to the $5 million Small Business Administration new startup loan, we handle it all.
Do you do a lot of real estate? Is most of the commercial backed by real estate?
That's one of the collaterals that we actually look at: commercial owner-occupied real estate, investment opportunities, investment property. I specialize, my market really is from Dawsonville pretty much down. I kind of call it the Georgia 400 corridor. So from Dawsonville basically to Roswell. Mm-hmm. But we've got 8 markets throughout, you know, throughout the city of Atlanta. And my focus is really kind of in that Roswell to Dawsonville area.
And then, so your name's not on any stadiums. You have a different marketing strategy?
Well, maybe we might petition for SunTrust Park to be Iberia right. Bank. That would be good. I'm good with that.
There's probably an opening, right? So now, how do you market Iberia Bank?
So we're never going to compete with the SunTrust BB&T Bank of America Chase dollars. And to be honest with you, we really don't want to. I want to share the story because I think I'm better than most commercials. I'm better than most direct advertising. I'm better than anything that we can put on TV or potentially radio. Obviously, that's one of the reasons I'm here today. But in the end, I present. I'm the one that goes out. And each one of our branch managers, it's like a market amongst itself. So we have a Peachtree Corners office. The branch manager over there and the commercial lender, Jeff Fairchild, he's the one that markets Peachtree Corners. I'm at Johns Creek. I market Johns Creek, Cumming, and Dawsonville. We have one in Roswell and so on. So from my perspective, best advertising, best marketing is me, whether it's networking.
So is that an Iberia Bank cultural thing where they expect that from the banker is to immerse themselves in the local community and serve the local, be visible and be a presence in order to show that you are part of the community? It's not that you're just a bank where it's a commodity that anybody can pop in there and it'll be a different person next time.
It's a great question, and I will say absolutely, because from my perspective, we're not going to have the foot traffic that SunTrust is going to have. We're not going to have the foot traffic that a Bank of America has. So, you know, from our perspective, we want to be out in the community. I love to, quote unquote, cold call. That doesn't bother me. I love to network. I love to get out and share the story. Again, I think I can do a much better job of sharing the 131-year story of Iberia Bank than a radio spot or a commercial on television might do. So whether it's networking organizations, chamber events, different opportunities, just going around and introducing, I don't even go out to really sell. When I go out and introduce myself, I just go out and say, hey, my name is Alex Roach. I'm a business partner of yours here in the community. I just want to introduce you and tell us a little bit about our story, and I want to get to know yours.
And then when you're working with somebody, they might come in, maybe they move their banking to your bank, then you get to know them and you see what their needs are. Do you do a lot of, hey, you should meet Bob. He's also a client here and trying to help you just in your business.
Sure. So referrals are the best resources for us. I don't think that there's a better resource because to me specifically, all banks for the most part, you know, relatively speaking, sell the same quote unquote widgets and services. There's a tweak here, tweak on a rate, a tweak on a potential product. But for the most part, we don't reinvent the wheel. So the only way to be successful is to separate yourself from a customer service perspective. I want my customers to be part of our family because in the end, they are going to be the best they're going to be the best resources for us to grow our business. Mm-hmm. So we take true ownership and really help and get our customers. And we ask them and say, hey, listen, you know, did you like the service provided today? If you did, you know, introduce us to somebody. I'd like to get to know someone you know.
And then when that takes place, so that's how you just grow word of mouth. That's probably the best way for you guys to expand, right? It's just do good work and then do it in a way that surprises and delights your customer so they want to tell their neighbor and friends.
Absolutely. I mean, besides my killer personality and desire to cold call all the time, absolutely. It's the referrals are the best resources for us, word of mouth. I found that one negative experience, as I said, I've been in this industry for 27 years, and in banking, one negative experience people will tell about 10 to 15 people. With one even really good positive experience, they tell about 3. So, you know, it takes a lot more to grab a client than it does to keep a client. And you really have to focus on, you know, being successful and getting your customers to bring, you know, more people in.
Now, how do you see the role of technology playing in the banking industry?
Oh, it's changed so much. When I first got in this, I opened up an account and I'd do a little 3x5 index card. And you'd sign your name. I'd write my own personal little X. And this was, you know, this is how we would, you know, define your account. Everybody, I think it started in probably 2016. There was a statistic that came out that said that about 85 to 89% of clients don't even come into the branch anymore. They're online. They're using a lot of the services like remote capture, which a commercial company will scan their checks in. I mean, I've got clients that expand all the way up from Oakwood, Georgia, all the way downtown to Atlanta. And these are, you know, 30 miles, you know, 40 plus miles away from me. So, and some of these clients I haven't seen in years, except for my ability to go out there and meet with them. So I do a lot of traveling, but technology's ratified, you know, the industry. And I think that's what you're seeing with the big mergers. I think that's what you're going to see as banking goes forward. I think that percentage probably go above 90%. We just, besides the, you know, the grandmother or the grandfather that wants to come in and get a cup of coffee and sit down and talk about their CDs, you know, for about an hour plus, there's very few customers, and especially with the millennial generation and the millennials start, you know, open up businesses, they rarely come in. Very, very rare. I mean, you have to go to them. They don't usually typically come to you.
Now, when you're working with somebody, a young person that is that tech savvy and prefers that kind of non-interaction, do you have tools for them, like an app and where they can deposit just by taking a picture? Do you have all the same tools that some of these other banks have?
Of course. So we have the what I call the big boy capability, so all the technology and strength of larger institutions, but like I said, that personal approach of a local, small, regional bank. Yeah, we have the apps where you can scan checks, deposit online for consumer. We have the apps and remote capabilities for a business.
To pay bills without...
Absolutely. Pay bills, transfer monies. So it used to be in the world of a transfer, if you came into a bank, typically you didn't want to write a check and you want to do electronically, you come in to do a wire transfer and you'd spend about $35 or $25 to do that for international domestic transfer. Now you just jump online in the app and you just transfer straight over from bank to bank. You don't have to write a check. You'll have it over in your other account within, you know, 24 hours.
Now, what about the tools like the Venmo or where the people pay each other with that? How does that play into banking?
It does. I mean, it's almost like a competitor of ours. But you know, we have our version basically of Venmo and things of that nature. So, our transfer app is very similar. It's the same process. I mean, it's, you know, PayPal kind of started this, and you know, a lot of industries, you know, like I said, in banking, it's not reinventing the wheel. So, you know, we take on, you know, what other institutions are doing, and you know, we're trying to stay up to speed and stay up to, you know, reference with the technology as well too. So,
now, for you personally, you've been in this for a long time. How have you seen is the biggest change the fact that no one goes into the branch, or less and less people are going into the branch?
No, I think people are much more savvy. I mean, one of the biggest things, obviously, technology is taking the people out of the branch, so we have to more go to the market. But people are a lot more savvy now. I mean, as a commercial lender, there are things that basically, they would just ask me in the past, am I approved? Am I declined? Where am I at? Now they would come to me before we even start the application, and they would ask me, hey, this is what my debt service coverage ratio is. I've got this amount. And they're just, people are a lot more aware. I can see that people have done a lot more studying. They're a lot more knowledgeable of the industry now. So that's been a tremendous change. And that I feel like the customers are just as vested as I am. So they've definitely done a lot of research when they come to us.
Now, as a customer that comes to you, they obviously you're not their first bank. They're coming from a bank to you, sure, or they're taking some of their money and then putting it in your bank. What's the kind of compelling reason that they're doing that?
So a lot of times, a lot of customers I get typically, and I mean, I'm name the bank if that's all right, but I get a lot of customers from Wells Fargo, and they don't like the size. They just don't like the fact of feeling like a number. You know, when I've in the past of organizations that I've joined, typically I've done smaller institutions. I like local institutions, like an alarm system. I go to local, you know, electricity. I usually try to choose, you know, restaurants. I choose local. And I think that's a big part of the clientele that we get is people that are just tired of being a number. They really would rather be a number one priority versus just a number itself. Mm-hmm. We know our customers. I make it a priority with my staff. So my retail staff that manages the branch on a day-to-day basis, I'm usually out and about, you know, visiting. But my goal is to make sure we know every customer's name and story. When I was first hired by Mark Tipton, he brought me in for an interview. He said, Alex, I'm going to go ahead and, I definitely want you a part of our team. I think you're going to be a great fit here. But he said, here's the deal. If I come to your branch and I see that you haven't sold enough widgets. I'm not going to be mad at you for that. He said, what I will be upset for you, if I'm coming out there and there's a customer in your lobby and you don't know that person and you don't know that story, I will write you up for that. And that kind of, that intrigued me. It was interesting because I come from the world of widgets. I come from the larger institutions and I come from the quote unquote numbers. So when he said that, I was like, you know, I really want to work for this guy and I really want to work for this institution. So
now of your business clients, are they around certain industries or is it kind of business agnostic that it's a wide variety? I mean, the Georgia economy is so diverse.
Because of the diversity of the economy in Georgia, we look at a wide range of industries. Really typically kind of going back to the early question you had, as far as, you know, we're looking at real estate. I think the collateral and the type of lending is more pertinent to us than the actual industry and client base. We really look for mid-sized businesses. Are we going to go after a Fortune 500 company? Certainly would like to try, but those capabilities are probably better served with, you know, a BB&T SunTrust. Ours is kind of a mid-sized middle bank, you know, banks that, you know, making, you know, gross sales over $5 million mm-hmm. typically.
So that's a good customer for you?
Correct.
So, but what about like the startup, the entrepreneur, the solopreneur?
Absolutely. So the entrepreneur and the solopreneur, we also have startup programs. We're a preferred lender for the Small Business Administration. And anybody that's familiar with the SBA, the Small Business Administration, they're very proactive about startup companies and startup businesses. So if we can't, you know, if we don't have a track record for a traditional, you know, loan in the conventional side, we've got the SBA that backs us up as well. As a preferred lender at Iberia.
So then what does it mean to be a preferred lender for the SBA?
It just means you've got your certification. It means that the SBA who will back the loan that the bank gives. So the bank's still going to give the loan, mm-hmm. but the SBA backs the loan. And it means you've gone through their certification, their programs to make sure that you're a preferred. Not all banks are a preferred lender. And to get that status, it's a very privileged status that a bank receives.
So if I'm a business owner that's looking at an SBA loan, like I would come to you and then you would help me fill out the application? Like, are you giving me a higher level of service to get the loan, or am I expected to have all the kind of paperwork right and I hand it to you? Like,
perfect. So when someone comes to me or I uncover an opportunity, I basically from start to go, I mean, start to end, I am with them the whole step of the way. I never leave my customers. I'm right there with them, holding their hand the whole time. So whether it's delivering the information of what's needed financially, the documents that are, you know, to be attained, you know, to the decision at underwriting and when the underwriting makes their decision to the closing, you know, obviously if we've gotten an approval. And I'm also the type that if I do get a declination, one of the things that's pertinent to me is that we actually have a local decision-making ability here in Georgia. So even though we're headquartered out of Louisiana, Louisiana may make the decision, but Louisiana doesn't quite know how a jewelry store works in off Old Milton.
Right.
So they're not very familiar, you know, with how. So we can actually offer that. So I offer my story, and I've actually turned declines into an override and approval. So I'm with the customer every step of the way, and you know, it's very important to me that they know, you know, what we're in the process they are and how I can help.
And then you can help them kind of manage their expectations of like what type of loan or how much of a loan they could get based Correct. On what their situation is.
Correct. So there are times where I had someone that was probably buying a little bit too much commercial real estate, probably really what they could afford. And I think ultimately my job as an advocate and also to help the client was, you know, this is going to put you in a potentially bad situation down the road. Yes, you potentially can qualify for this, but let's sit down and talk about this. Maybe at this point, maybe you should look at maybe a $400,000 commercial line, you know, real estate versus a $750,000. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want you to get 2 years down the road where you're coming to me and you've had a bad situation or an economic failure.
Right.
So, you know, we look at it not only as an opportunity. It's not about selling a product. It's trying to get the customer to the dream of where they're trying to
right.
you know, go.
Whatever the outcome they desire, you're Correct. Trying to help them make that happen. Mm-hmm. So now on a day-to-day basis, are you spending most of your time out and about at clients or networking or meeting prospective new clients?
Usually most of my time, I'd probably say about 80% of my time is out of the office. I'm in the office maybe 15-20% wow. of the time, but yeah, my goal is to be out amongst the community, meeting as many people as I can. I'm in, you know, two different networking groups, about to be in a third one, hopefully, next Tuesday. So yeah, I spend a lot of time out and about. And love Atlanta.
What's your favorite part of the job?
That's a great question. I think just probably helping somebody achieve the goals that they want. I mean, that was the one reason I left the bigger institutions, is because it felt like a product. It just felt like, you know, I just sold a product, you know, yeah, I'll get some incentive out of that. That's great. But I really enjoy, like, if I get somebody into a new home, a dream home, if I get somebody an opportunity to be an entrepreneur, they've been working out of their garage, or they've been working out of their, you know, they had their home business for a while, but now they get an opportunity to get a building off of Windward. That excites me. I love seeing how
and then especially like if you can help them get the funds they need to take their business to the next level, that must be rewarding.
Then, yeah, they like taking me to lunch and
I'm sure. When
that happens. Yeah, the approval conversation is a lot better than the declination one, that's for sure.
And then how do you see Iberia doing in this market? Are they looking to expand and put more branches? Or
yeah, so going back to the example of the SunTrust BB&T merger, there will probably be some chaos over, you know, the next year or two. And with this merger, my guess is because of SunTrust's enormous presence in the city of Atlanta, there'll probably be some branches closed. There'll be some opportunities. And I know we obviously have an interest in growing. I mean, we've talked about, currently we're kind of in the metro Atlanta area. I'm probably the most northern branch in the Forsyth, you know, coming market. But they like the northern arc. They like the Gwinnett. They like Cherokee. They like that kind of northern arc of the umbrella. So they're definitely in a growth mode. And with Florida that they picked up, they're moving into South Carolina, New York. So they're definitely really interested in growing right now.
And it's primarily Southeast right now.
Yeah, so the CEO, Daryl Byrd, who is out of Louisiana, he actually said, which was kind of interesting when we first got bought by Iberia Bank, he says, I want to be in the state where the presence of an SEC footprint. And I'm like, okay, well, he's an SEC football fan. That works. So I'm still kind of curious about New York because I don't really see much of an SEC footprint.
Maybe he knows something we don't know.
You never know. You never know.
So right now, if a person wants to learn more, maybe have a more substantive conversation, what's the best way? Do they go to iberiabank.com? Is the website the best place, or does your branch have its own kind of presence out there?
So www.iberiabank.com is one of the best to learn a little bit about Iberia. But my office, like I said, is located in the Johns Creek Cumming area. Technically, we're a Johns Creek office, but our address is actually city-wise is Cumming. We're kind of right there on the border of Sewanee, Cumming, and Johns Creek.
Right, where that all comes together. So now, is there a web? So they just drill down to location and they can find you on the Iberia Bank?
So I'm located at the Johns Creek. I'm one of 8 branches currently in the Atlanta market. But yeah, my office is, again, Alex Roach with the Johns Creek office is my location.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Next up on Office Evolution Radio, Nicole Mitchell with HR Biz. Welcome.
Thank you.
How's your banking? Got to get it. Lean in there. Rock star this.
My mic. Banking is pretty good for now.
But I don't know. I know a guy in banking.
Sounds like there's a good guy in banking.
That's right. So tell us about HR Biz Group. How are you serving folks?
HR Biz Group is a custom HR solutions for small to medium sized businesses. What we do is provide custom services for those companies who may not feel that they can afford or may not need an HR solution or HR partner with them. So we come in and pretty much, do you need a handbook? Do you need assistance with payroll? Or do you need somebody by your side to conduct all those employee and regulatory things you need to do?
So now where is that kind of line drawn where a person needs an HR person or should at least be considering that?
So you'll hear me say custom a lot in my conversation because it can be, and some people distinguish between employees and contractors, whether or not their setup is appropriate for it. But when you have two people, you have payroll, or you have not necessarily the employee relations issues, but you do have all of the things that you need to take care of. Mm-hmm. And what we try to do is also make sure that you're setting up the infrastructure because you may not be two people forever.
Right.
So what do you do when you're two people and now you're 20 and 50 and what do you have to do according to that?
Now, what are some kind of HR compliance mistakes that the small business person makes? probably see all the time.
Yes, we've got the, as I mentioned, payroll is one of those issues where people are not sure how they should classify their employees. And you hear a lot about the hot topics in HR, but payroll is one of those things where there are fines. If you're the big companies, the fines are in the millions, but you can't afford it at tens of thousands for someone. So you classified them as a salaried employee and they should be hourly, or you didn't do their overtime calculation correctly. Any of those things are the ones that can definitely get someone into trouble.
And then do a lot of times the small business person, they just think they can do it themselves?
The DIY, yes. So a lot of times you'll have either the owners doing it. And again, as a small business owner myself, I can understand where you have to decide where your budget's going. What are you going to spend your revenue on? And HR is not a revenue generating part of what people consider. So you decide, well, I'm going to get QuickBooks for my payroll. I'm going to do all the things that I can for myself. Yeah,
the commercial makes it look very easy.
Exactly. You know, you go in and you put your information, which could work for a certain amount of time. But after that, you know, you do have some other details that you need to take care of, or they put someone in the company in charge of doing whatever it is, which is great if they're handling just some of the basics, but they don't have a background knowledge. So if the office manager is the one who's onboarding your employees, there are only so many things that they know to do or are familiar with.
Now, aren't there some areas in HR that can benefit the business? I know you said it's not necessarily revenue generating, but if you're looking to grow or expand your business, there's some help that an HR professional can give you in terms of documenting processes and creating handbooks and things that can help you scale.
Absolutely. So part of the concept is that when you are setting up the business, you want to make sure you're looking at all of the things. So people automatically gravitate to, I need an accountant or I need an attorney.
Right.
But in the process of doing all of that, you also need to make sure that you have put in place the, as you said, employee handbook. So I've got these employees now. How am I making sure that they're supporting my business? How are they portraying what we have to do? So businesses go anywhere from, you know, retail, restaurants. I went into a establishment yesterday. There were five employees brand new. They had had their grand opening maybe the week before. There were five employees not doing anything. So somewhere there was not some strategy of, did you train the most senior person? Do they know when to send someone home? You know, things that you can do to recruit quality individuals and also to retain them. And that's part of what your business needs to focus on.
So now walk me through what, as soon as you meet somebody that's a prospective client, or if maybe they just hired you, how do you kind of educate them to make sure that they're doing things right and they're getting the most out of your service?
Right. So the first thing we'll do is a complimentary consultation. So sit down and really can't do anything until we know where you stand. What is it that you are doing? And not necessarily pain points, but what are you looking to do? How many employees do you have? Do you have a payroll system? Are you set up in order to make sure you have unemployment and all of those things? So we sit down probably about 45 minutes and get an idea, have a checklist of things that we'll go over. And from there, go back and can come up with a plan of what would be most appropriate. Again, anywhere from a project base to, you know, we've looked at it and you really just need to put some things in place or come up with a project schedule, and we'll walk through all of the things that you need to do to get you set up correctly and compliant.
Now, what about they say, oh, I use, you know, like Paychex or one of these firms. Like, do you help them work with those people more effectively, or do you say, you know, there might be another solution other than that, or you kind of payroll company agnostic?
It depends. Again, I'm agnostic because there are certain fits that will work with certain individuals. So what happens, a lot of the payroll companies now are also getting onto the HR side of it. So aside from offering just payroll and cutting checks and doing that, then they offer some HR services. The problem with that, usually it's pretty cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. So then I'll give you a template and you can fill these things out. But we can work with whichever one that you have. But I also like to make recommendations. Maybe you have something and we can look at what's going to work better for you. Again, in the growth trajectory, if I'm a company with 10 individuals, but I'm going to be at 25 or 30, maybe I need a timekeeping system. And your current payroll system may not offer the best, or mm-hmm. layering products on top of each other. So those are opportunities to make recommendations and then be strategic about what's going to work best for the company.
Now, if they have maybe a company they're not happy with, is it good to have you kind of come in and you get the lay of the land and maybe you can make recommendations?
Absolutely. Part of the success of the company is going to depend on which systems you choose and right. what's going to be the best fit for you. So because it's a big name, again, same thing like with the big banks, because
it may
there's
not
a
be
big
the
name,
right solution,
it might
right?
not be the right fit. And the things that they're offering you don't necessarily go along. And culture and vision, again, have a lot to do with how the company's going to work. So the biggest company may not be the one that's going to help you when you need to make changes or be nimble and be able to, you know, make some quick adjustments when things change.
Now, what about the company maybe that's a little larger? Can you help them with training? Can you help them with other HR kind of functions?
Absolutely. So anywhere, and I say from recruitment to termination, the part of the job that nobody ever wants to talk about. Sometimes it's, you know, voluntary or not.
Have you just fired people?
I have. I had a client who the first thing I did for them was fire someone, which is a very interesting introduction right. to the company. But we do all of the things in between. And if you are that larger organization, you may need to focus again on the specifics of employee training. Mm-hmm. In the media and the, you know, conversations about the Me Too movement, people don't pay right. attention to things until it hits home. But being proactive again and making sure that you have those things in place so it's not a problem, but this is something I do every year, it keeps it fresh, and all the way to actual on the job training. Once you're familiar with a job description, we can come in and make sure they're trained to the systems or the information that they need.
Now, do you see some companies, especially smaller ones, not understanding how important HR is to developing a culture for the company? Like you can really impact the culture of the company.
Absolutely. And one of the things that that turns into, and the owners don't understand, they say, I have a lot of turnover. I don't know. You know, people seem to be leaving the company. Well, they seem to be leaving for a particular reason, that there are things that are going on, and whether or not you're managing how that culture is, what are the managers saying? What are the supervisors doing? And how are you taking care of that so people are actually interested in coming to work? Again, that retention of, it's not always just about the money. People will say, you know, the conversation that people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. So if you kind of take your hands off of the business and you let whoever is there do what they want to do, as long as revenue is coming in, you create yourself a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So have you always worked for yourself, or did you have a traditional HR background in a larger organization?
I do have the traditional background. I've worked in retail, government, and private industry, and decided to work for myself really to be able to help the small business owner. So an employer that I was with, we went from 45 employees to 190 employees,
wow.
which gave me the opportunity to see the spectrum of a growing business and when is it time to put certain things in place and adding policies and all of those. So 15 plus years experience in being able to say, okay, yes, these are the things. And being a generalist, I recommend with people get their hands in, you know, find out the different areas. So I'm familiar with all of the different parts, not just a payroll or a benefits question.
And then what types of companies do you work with mostly?
They vary anywhere from the real estate company who has apartment complexes and the manager may be like, oh, it's like my therapist. I have to call and tell you, you know, right. ask you what's going on. Government contracts, doctor's offices. The beauty of HR is that it's universal. So mm-hmm. the companies that, you know, I come in contact with or I'm referred to are often in different industries, but they have a similar need.
And then do you prefer working in one group than another? Like, do you like restaurants more than doctor's offices, or it's all the same?
It's all the same. I probably do have the niche. I have a healthcare background, so HR is actually my second career. So probably I'm easiest and most familiar with being able to say, yes, this is what's going on. And again, industry-wise, there's a difference that you have to apply to certain companies where you're working with technical background individuals versus those who are very, very customer-oriented.
And then in healthcare, there's probably a whole bunch of compliance issues that like a restaurant wouldn't have to deal with.
Absolutely. There are the things that will come into play, for example, just patient information. So the procedures that you may have to write up are going to entail what are your employees doing when they're coming across this information, mm-hmm. because they now have, you know, the patient's name, date of birth, address, medical information about them, making sure that those are the things that owners have a tendency to think about. Again, you come in and you leave, but what happened with that paperwork?
Right.
And where was it? Who did something with it?
And then it's also in healthcare, isn't it? Also, the vendor has to be That's
absolutely
the same level of compliance, and you have to manage that.
Exactly. You've got a business associate agreement. Again, back to the harassment, what people don't understand is that vendors are also part of your culture and your corporation.
Right.
So if you have a vendor who's coming in and they have access to information or their access to patients, things like that, they are going to be the ones who you're also liable for because you expose them to the information. Mm-hmm.
So do you have any stories you can share where you came in and made a big impact on the company you serve?
Well, one of them, I'll stick with the healthcare, is a doctor's office that they were in a position that they wanted to grow. They wanted to expand and add facilities and testing to what they did, but they really didn't have the cohesiveness in place at different locations. And it was hard for them to figure out how to manage things across the board and say, what's our communication style? So employees over here don't know what employees over there are doing. And coming in, and we started from scratch and said, okay, let's look at take a look at the handbook that they did have. Let's put everything in place and let's put systems in place that made it easier for them to collaborate across the board, be able to back each other up. If someone was out at one location, even basic things, even as the phone system such that they can pick up the calls from one place to the other. It lowered the employee's stress and it gave them structure to be able to say, yes, you know, and the owner, they care about what's going on with me. It's not just about seeing the patients. It's what we need to do in order to make this a successful practice and make it a good place to come to work.
So you actually went in there and just wrote down, this is how they answer the optimal way to answer the phone.
We work together as a team. So a practice manager is there and they're going to be there. So I'm not going to be there every day, which sometimes is the good thing because there's a one removed factor.
And it's fresh eyes though. When you are there, you're looking at it with kind of
exactly
point of view.
So we could sit down and yes, we went through the script of when they were answering the phone. We went through what are their procedures, when someone's going to be out, who's going to be coming up with a plan of who's going to be able to cover it. So going in and sitting, and that's an important part with not just with the owner, but with the team, for them to understand that this is part, you know, anything that the owner is doing is going to be a part of improving the process and improving the workplace and the culture.
And then you document, and then every office could have this documentation so that everybody's on the same page.
Exactly. We set up, you know, places where they could go and find the policies, put things online. SharePoint was there, but not really being utilized.
Right.
But now you can go in and everybody sees the same thing. I don't wonder if we're doing it over here one way and, you know,
and
somebody
doing
else
it a completely different way.
Exactly. Yes.
So that you probably see that a lot, right?
We do, just because, again, people don't really realize the value of the policies and procedures. It's a background thing. It's something that we need to do. But to make life easier and be able to have the opportunity where I have a standard procedure, again, from the employee relations, I always tell someone, and I speak with other HR professionals, that you want to start from a policy. It's not my opinion. It's not what I think we should do.
Right.
The employee may ask the question, well, what about? And the first thing you can do is go back to that policy. So this is the policy. This is how it works. Now let's talk about maybe there's something specific to your situation. But it puts a level playing field for everyone in the company. There's no appearances of favoritism or I made a decision for one person that I wouldn't for the other.
And also, if you want to scale your business, it's good to have this kind of framework there.
Exactly, exactly. Then it's a revision to a handbook. It's not starting from scratch
every time.
Every time. You can layer on things. Social media was something that, you know, got to be an important part of handbooks. And so now you can say, yes, I have a policy there, whether or not I have people out on the road, if I have sales individuals, all those things are already there. And who are they coming in contact with?
So now what's the pain a company's having where they should call HR biz?
Depends on what the size of the company may be. You can have pain points, as I said, in compliance. You can have pain points in payroll. You can have pain points in just growing. What do I do next? And the beauty of looking at where you are and deciding what is it that you can do is the time frame that's going to save you from I started, I made some mistakes, and now I have to go back and correct them. So clients, for me, and sometimes the referrals are people who are having a conversation and, man, I'm struggling with, you know, keeping these employees, or I don't know where to hire someone from. There's someone who can, you know, come in, talk with you and help you how to resolve those problems. That's where HR biz would be the best value.
So then, like, they're growing or they're struggling to find the right fit.
Exactly.
Then they can call you and you can help.
I can call me and I can help. I have consultants, and again, depending on what they need, I have other consultants that I work with. So if we're in the larger company scenario, then they're sometimes they're trying to figure out compensation. If it's something that I can tap into someone who is a compensation analyst, we're going to get you the best answers and the expertise that you have, and not relying on whether or not, well, we're just going to, you know, kind of work it out on the way.
Good stuff. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the website?
The website is www.hrbizgroup.com. I can also be found on LinkedIn, Nicole Mitchell, and my website. You can find information for contact or scheduling a consultation.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Torre. We will see you all next time on Office Evolution Radio.